Murder will in. As the body died, the Tagus Bacchet awoke. Unconsciousness had lasted its usual flickering instant for the Tagus element. He came out of it with his Bacchet negative identity chanting, "Not William Bailey! I'm not William Bailey! I'm not William Bailey!" It was a painful, monotonous refrain, schismatic, important. The Tagus had to separate its identity from this fading flesh. Behind the chant lay a sense of many voices clamoring. Awareness began to divide, a splitting seam that separated him from the compressed contact which controlled the host. There came a sensation of tearing fabric, and he rode free, still immersed in the dying neural system, because he had no other place to go, but capable of the identity leap. Bacchet and Tagus now functioning together, sticking him to each instant. He searched his surroundings. 20 meters. 20 meters. Flickering, pale emotions registered on his awareness. Another attendant. The man passed out of range. Cold, cold, cold. Nothing else. What a rare joke this was, he thought. What a mischievous thing for fate to do. A Tagus to be caught like this. Mischievous, mischievous. It wasn't fair. Hadn't he always treated the captive flesh with gentle care? Hadn't he made fun-lovers out of killers? Fate's mischief was cruel, not kindly, in the manner of the Tagus. The Bacchet negative identity projected terror, accusation, embarrassment. He had lived too long in the William Bailey flesh. Too long. He had lived down where men were, where things were made, in the thick of being. He'd loved the flesh too much. He should have stopped occasionally and looked around him, the great Tagus' curiosity, which masqueraded his diffidence to hide itself, had failed to protect him. Failed. Failed. Within the dying neural system, frantic messages began darting back and forth. His mind was a torrent, a flare of being. Thoughts flew off like sparks from a grinding wheel. "It's decided," the Tagus transmitted, seeking to quiet his negative self. The communicative contact returned a sharp feeling of shame and loss. The Bacchet shifted from terror to fifth-order displeasure, which was almost as bad as the terror. All the lost experiences, lost, lost, lost. "I had no idea the euthanasia center would be that simple and swift," the Tagus transmitted. "The incident is past changing. What can we do?" He thought of the one vid call he'd permitted himself, to check on the center's hours and routine. A gray-haired, polished contact with the public type had appeared on the screen. "We are fast, clean, neat, efficient, sanitary, and reverent," the man had said. "Fast? Who would want a slow death?" The Tagus wished in this instant for nothing more than a slow death. If only he'd checked further. He'd expected this place to be seething with emotions, but it was emotionally dead, silent as a tomb. The joke thought fell on inner silence. The Bacchet transfixed their composite self with a projection of urgent measurement, the 20 meters limit across which the Tagus could launch them into a new host. But there had been no way of knowing this place was an emotional vacuum until the Tagus element had entered here, probed the place. and these chambers where he now found himself were much farther from the street than 20 meters. Momentarily, the Tegus was submerged in accusatory terror. This death isn't like murder at all! Yet, he'd thought it would be like murder. And it was murder that had been the saving device of the Tegus Bacchet for centuries. A murderer could be depended upon for total emotional involvement. A murderer could be lured close, 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 much closer than 20 meters. It had been so easy to goad the human creatures into that violent act, to set up the ideal circumstances for the identity leap. The Tegus absolutely required profound emotions in a prospective host. One couldn't focus on the neural totality without it. Bits of the creature's awareness center tended to escape. That could be fatal. As fatal as the trap in which he now found himself. Murder. The swift outflow of life from the discarded host, the emotional concentration of the new host, and before he knew it, the murderer was captive of the Tegus, captive in his own body. The captive awareness cried out silently, darting inward with ever-tightening frenzy until it was swallowed, and the Tegus could get on about its business of enjoying life. This world had changed, though, in the past 100 years of the William Bailey period. Murder had been virtually eliminated by the new predictive techniques and computers of the data center. The android law nicks were everywhere, anticipating violence, preventing it. This was an elliptical development of society, and the Tegus realized he should have taken it into account long ago, but life tended to be so pleasant when it held the illusion of never-ending. For the Tegus, migrating across the universe with its hosts, moving as a predator in the dark of life, the illusion could be a fact, unless it ended here. It didn't help matters that decisions had been forced upon him. Despite a fairly youthful appearance, the host flesh of William Bailey had been failing. The Tegus could keep its host going far beyond the normal span, but when the creature began to fail, collapse could be massive and abrupt. I should have tried to attack someone in circumstances where I'd have been killed, he thought. But he'd seen the flaw there. The emotionless Lawnix would have been on him almost instantly. Death might have escaped him. He could have been trapped in a crippled, dying host surrounded by android blankness, or, even worse, surrounded by humans rendered almost emotionless by that damnable middle way and eightfold karma. And the hounds were on his trail. He knew they were. He'd seen plenty of evidence, sensed the snoopers. He'd lived too long as William Bailey. The ones who thrived on suspicion had become suspicious, and they couldn't be allowed to examine a Tegus host too closely. He knew what had put them on his trail. That diabolical, total profile of motives. The Tegus in William Bailey was technically a murderer thousands of times over. Not that he went on killing and killing. Once in a human lifetime was quite enough. Murder could take the fun out of life. Thoughts were useless now, he realized. He had, after all, been trapped. Thinking about it led only to Bacchet accusations. And while he jumped from thought to thought, the William Bailey body moved nearer and nearer to dissolution. The body now held only the faintest contact with life, and that only because of desperate Tegus efforts. A human medic would have declared Bailey dead. Breathing had stopped. Abruptly, the heart, fibrillated, ceased function. Less than 5 minutes remained for the Tegus. He had to find a new host in 5 minutes with this one. Murder, murder, murder. The Bacchet intruded. You said euthanasia would be murder. The Tuggers felt William Bailey shame. He cursed inwardly. The Backet, normally such a useful function for a Tuggers, driving away intellectual loneliness, providing companionship and caution, had become a distracting liability. The intrusion of terrifying urgency stopped thought. Why couldn't the Backet be silent and let him think? Momentarily, the Tuggers realized he'd never before considered the premises of his own actions. What was the Backet? He'd never hungered after his own kind, for he had the Backet. But what, after all, was the Backet? Why, for example, would it let him captivate only males? Female thinking might be a help in this emergency. Why couldn't he mix the sexes? The Backet used the inner shout. Now we have time for philosophy. It was too much. Silence! The Tuggers commanded. An immediate sense of loneliness rocked him. He defied it, probed his surroundings. Any host would do in this situation, even a lower animal, though he hadn't risked one of those in eons. Surely there must be some emotional upset in this terrible place. Something, anything. He remembered a long-ago incident when he'd allowed himself to be slain by a type who'd turned out to be completely emotionless. He'd barely managed to shift in time to an eyewitness to the crime. The moment had been like this one in its sudden emergency, but who was eyewitness to this killing? Where was an alternative host? He searched fruitlessly. Synapses began snapping in the William Bailey neural system. The Tuggers withdrew to the longest-lived centers, probed with increasing frenzy. A seething emotional mass lifted itself on his awareness horizon. Fear, self-pity, revenge, anger, a lovely prospect, like a rescue steamer bearing down on a drowning mariner. I'm not William Bailey, he reminded himself, and launched outwards, homing on that boiling tangle of paradox, that emotional beacon. There came the usual bouncing shock as he grabbed for the new host's identity centers. He poured out through his sensorium, discovered his own movements, felt something cold against his wrist. It was not yet completely his wrist, but the eyes were sufficiently under control for him to force them towards the source of sensation. A flat, gray, metallic object swam into focus. It was pressed against his wrist. Simultaneously, there occurred a swarming sense of awareness within the host. It was a sighing out, not submission, but negative exaltation. The Tuggers felt an old heart begin to falter, looked at an attendant, unfamiliar face, owlish features around a sharp nose, but no emotional intensity, no central hook of being to be grabbed and captivated. The room was a twin to the one in which he'd been captured by this system. The ceiling's time readout said only 8 minutes had passed since that other wrist had been touched by death.
"If you'll be so kind as to go through the door behind you," the owl-faced attendant said, "I do hope you can make it. Had to drag three of you in there already this shift. I'm rather weary. Let's get moving, eh?"
Weary, yes. The attendant radiated only emotional weariness. It was nothing a Tuggers could grasp. The new host responded to the idea of urgency, pushed up out of a chair, shambled towards an oval door. The attendant hurried him along with an arm across the old shoulders. The Tuggers moved within the host, consolidated neural capacity, swept in an unresisting awareness. It wasn't an awareness he'd have taken out of choice. Defeated. Submissive. There was something strange about it. The Tegas detected a foreign object pressed against the host's spine, a capsule of some kind, neural transmitter, receiver. It radiated an emotional damper effect. Commands of obedience. The Tegas blocked it off swiftly, terrified by the implications of such an instrument. He had the host's identity now. James Daggett. That was the name. Age 71. The body was a poor, used-up relic. Weaker, more debilitated than William Bailey had been at 236. The host's bird-like awareness, giving itself up to the Tegas as it gave up to death, radiated oddly mystical thoughts, confusions, assumptions, filterings. The Tegas was an angel, come to escort me. Still trailing wisps of William Bailey, the Tegas avoided too close a linkage with this new host. The name and self-recognition centers were enough. He realized, with a twisted sense of defeat, that the old body was being strapped onto a hard surface. The ceiling loomed over him a featureless gray. Dulled nostrils sniffed at an antiseptic breeze.
"Sleep well, Paisano,"
the attendant said. Not again, the Tegas thought. His back had half reasserted itself. We can jump from body to body, dying a little each time. What fun! The Tegas transmitted a remote obscenity from another world and another eon, describing what the back at half could do with its bitterness. Vacuity replaced the intrusion. Defeat. Defeat. Part of this doomed mood, he realized, came out of the James Daggett personality. The Tegas took the moment to probe that host's memories. Found the time when the transmitter had been attached to his spine. Defeat, obedience, defeat. It stemmed from that surgical instant. He restored the blocks, quested outwards for a new host. Questing, he searched his Tegas memory. There must be a clue somewhere, a hint, a thought, some way of escape. He missed the Baggett contribution. Parts of his memory felt cut off. The neural linkage with the dying James Daggett clung like dirty mud to his thoughts. Ancient, dying James Daggett remained filled with mystical confusions until he was swallowed by the Tegas. It was a poor neural connection. The host was supposed to resist. That strengthened the Tegas' grip. Instead, the Tegas ran into softly dying walls of another memory. Linkages slipped. He felt his awareness range contracting. Something swam into the questing field. Anger. Outrage of the kind frequently directed against stupidities. The Tegas waited, wondering if this could be another client of the center. Now, trailing the angry one, came another identity. Fear dominated this one. The Tegas went into a mental crouch, focused its awareness hungrily. An object of anger, a fearful one, there was a one that Tegas could grab. Voices came to him from the hallway outside the alcove, rasping, attacking, and delayed. Fearful. James Daggett's old and misused ears cut off overtones, reduced volume. There wasn't time to strengthen the host's hearing circuits, but the Tegas grasped the sense of the argument. Told to notify. Immediately if. Bailey. William Bailey. Saw the. Your desk. And the fearful one, busy, you've no idea how, and understaffed, and in an hour, only this shift. The voices receded, but the emotional auras remained within Tegas' range. Dead! It was the angry one, a voice blast accompanied by a neural overload that rolled across the Tegas like a giant wave. At the instant of rage, the fearful one hit a momentary fear peak. Abject retreat. The Tegas pounced, quitting James Daggett in the blink out as life went under.
It was like stepping off a sinking boat into a storm-racked cockleshell. He was momentarily lost in the tracery of material space-time, which was the chosen host. Abruptly, he realized the fearful one had husbanded a reserve of supercilious hate. An ego corner fortified by resentments against authority accumulated over many years. The bouncing shock of the contact was accompanied by an escape of the host's awareness into the fortified corner. The Tagus knew then he was in for a fight such as he'd never before experienced. The realization was accompanied by a blurred glimpse through host eyes of a darkly suspicious face staring at him across a strapped-down body. The death-locked features of the body shook him. William Bailey! He almost lost the battle right there. The host took control of the cheeks, contorted them. The eyes behaved independently, one looking up, the other down. He experienced direct perception, seeing with the fingertips, pale glowing, hearing with the lips, an itch of sound. Skin trembled and flushed. He staggered, heard a voice shout, "Who are you? What are you doing to me?" It was the host's voice, and the Tagus, snatching at the vocal centers, could only burr the edges of sound, not blank out intelligibility. He glimpsed the dark face across from him in an eye-swirling flash. The other had recoiled, staring. It was one of the suspicious ones, the hated ones, the ones who rule. No time to worry about that now. The Tagus was fighting for survival. He summoned every trick he'd ever learned. Cajolery, mystical subterfuges, a flailing of religious illusion, love, hate, wordplay. Men were an instrument of language and could be snared by it. He went in snake-striking dashes along the neural channels. The name! He had to get the name! Carmi! Carmichael! He had half the name then, a toehold on survival. Silently roaring inward along synaptic channels, he screamed the name. "I'm Carmichael! I'm Carmichael!" "No! Yes! I'm Carmichael!" "You're not! You're not! I'm Carmichael!" The host was bludgeoned into puzzlement. "Who are you? You can't be me. I'm Joe. Joe Carmichael." The Tagus exulted, snapping up the whole name. "I'm Joe Carmichael." The host's awareness spiraled inward, darting, frenzied. Eyes rolled, legs trembled, arms moved with the disjointed flapping, teeth gnashed, tears rolled down the cheeks. The Tagus smashed at him now. "I'm Joe Carmichael." "No, no, no." It was a fading inner scream, winking out. Back. Out. Silence. "I'm Joe Carmichael," the Tagus thought. It was a Joe Carmichael thought, faintly touched by Tagus' inflections and Beckett's reproving. "That was too close." The Tagus realized he lay flat on his back on the floor. He looked up into dark features identified by host memories. "Chadrick Vicentelli, Commissioner of Crime Prevention." "Mr. Carmichael," Vicentelli said. "I've summoned help. Rest quietly. Don't try to move just yet." What a harsh, unmoving face, the Tagus thought. Vicentelli's was a no-mask face. And the voice, wary, cold, suspicious, this violent incident wasn't on any computer's predictives. Or was it? No matter. A suspicious man had seen too much. Something had to be done. Immediately. Feet already could be heard pounding along the corridor. "Don't know what's wrong with me," the Tagus said, managing the Carmichael voice with memory help from the Bailey period. "Dizzy. Whole world seemed to go red." "You look alert enough now," Vicentelli said. There was no give in that voice, no love. Violence there, suspicious hate contained in sharp edges. "You look alert enough now." A tag of shudder went through the Carmichael body. He studied the probing, suspicious eyes. This was the breed Tegas avoided. Rulers possess terrible resources for the inner battle. That was one of the reasons they ruled. Tegas had been swallowed by rulers, dissolved, lost. Mistakes had been made in the dim beginnings before Tegas learned to avoid one such as this. Even on this world, the Tegas recalled early fights, near things that had resulted in rumors and customs, myths, racial fears. All primitives knew the code. Never reveal your true name. And here was a ruler who had seen too much in times when that carried supreme danger. Suspicion was aroused. A sharp intelligent weighed data it should never have received. Two red-coated android lawniks, as alike in their bland-featured intensity as obedient dogs, swept through the alcove hangings, came to a stop, waiting for Vicentelli's orders. It was unnerving. Even with androids, the ones who submitted never hesitated in looking first to a ruler for their orders. The Tegas thought of the control capsule that had been on James Daggett's spine. A new fear trembled through him. The host's mouth was dry with a purely Carmichael emotion.
"This is Joseph Carmichael," Vicentelli said, pointing. "I want him taken to IC for a complete examination and motivational profile. I'll meet you there. Notify the appropriate cadres."
The lawniks helped the Tegas to his new feet.
"I see. Investigation Central," he thought.
"Why are you taking me to IC?" he demanded. "I should go to a hospital for—"
"We've medical facilities," Vicentelli said. He made it sound ominous.
"Medical facilities for what?
But why?"
"Be quiet and obey," Vicentelli said. He glanced at William Bailey's body, back to Carmichael. It was a look full of weighted suspicions, half-knowledge, educated assumptions.
The Tegas glanced at William Bailey's body, was caught by an inward memory touch that wrenched at his new awareness. It had been a superior host, flesh deserving of love. The nostalgia passed. He looked back at Vicentelli, formed a vacant stare of confusion. It was not a completely feigned reaction. The Carmichael takeover had occurred in the presence of the suspected William Bailey. No matter that William Bailey was a corpse, that merely fed the suspicions. Vicentelli, assuming an unknown presence in William Bailey, would think it had leaped from the corpse to Carmichael.
"We're interested in you," Vicentelli said. "Very interested. Much more interested than we were before your recent, seizure."
He nodded to the androids.
"Seizure?"
the Tegas thought. Firm, insistent hands propelled him through the alcove curtains into the hallway, down the hall, through the antiseptic white of the employee's dressing room, and out of the back door. The day he'd left such a short time before as William Bailey appeared oddly transformed to the Carmichael eyes. There was a slight change in the height of the eyes, of course. A matter of perhaps 3 centimeters taller for Carmichael. He had to break his visual reactions out of respective habits formed by more than 2 centuries at Bailey's height. But the change was more than that. He felt that he was seeing the day through many eyes, many more than the host's 2. The sensation of multi-ocular vision confused him, but he hadn't time to examine it before the lawniks pushed him into the one-way glass cage of an air car. The door hissed closed, thumping on its seals, and he was alone, peering out through the blue-gray filtering of the windows. He leaned back on padded plastic. The air car leaped upward out of the plastrate canyon, sped across the great table and roof of the euthanasia center toward the distant man-made peaks of IC. The central complex of government was an area that Tagus always had avoided. He wished nothing more now than to continue avoiding it. A feeling came over him that his universe had shattered. He was trapped here. Not just trapped in the aircar flitting toward the plastrate citadel of IC, but trapped in the ecosystem of the planet. It was a sensation he'd never before experienced, not even on that eons-distant day when he'd landed here in a conditioned host at the end of a trip which had taxed the limits of the host's viability. It was the way of the Tagus, though, to reach out for new planets, new hosts. It had become second nature to choose the right kind of planet, the right kind of developing life forms. The right kind always developed star travel, releasing the Tagus for a new journey, new explorations, new experiences. That way, boredom never intervened. The creatures of this planet were headed towards the stellar leap, too, given time. But the Tagus, experiencing a new fear for him, realized he might not be around to take advantage of that stellar leap. It was a realization that left him feeling exhausted, time-scalded, injured in his responses like a mistreated instrument. "Where did I go wrong?" he wondered. "Was it in the original choice of the planet?" His back at half, usually so explicit in reaction to inner searching, spread across their mutual awareness a projected sense of the fuzzy unknowns ahead. This angered the Tagus. The future always was unknown. He began exploring his host's self, assessing what he could use in the coming showdown. It was a good host, healthy, strong. Its musculature and neural system capable of excellent Tagus reinforcement and intensification. It was a host that could give good service, perhaps even longer than William Bailey. The Tagus began doing what he could in the time available, removing inhibitory blocks for quicker and smoother neural responses, setting up a heart and vascular system buffer. He took a certain pride in the work. He'd never misused a host, as long as it remained viable. The natural Tagus resilience, the thing that kept him going, kept him alive and interested, the endless curiosity, reasserted itself. Whatever was about to happen, it would be new. He seated himself firmly in the host, harnessed the Carmichael memory system to his Tagus responses, and readied himself to meet the immediate future. A thought crept into his mind. In the delicate immensity that was his own past, there lay non-human experiences. How subtle was this total profile of personality? Could it detect the non-human? Could it cast a template which would compare too closely with William Bailey, or any of the others they might have on their data center lists? He sensed the dance of the intellects within him, pounding out their patterns on the floor of his awareness. In a way, he knew he was all the captive stalks bound up like a sheaf of grain. The cityscape passing beneath the aircar became something sensed rather than seen. Tiny frenzies of fear began to dart about in him. What tools of psychometry would his interrogators use? How discreet, how subtle. Beneath their probes he must be nothing other than Joe Carmichael. Yet he was far more. He felt the current of now sweeping his existence toward peril. Danger, danger, danger. He could see it intellectually as Tagus. He responded to it as Joe Carmichael. Sweat drenched his body. The air car began to descend. He stared at the backs of the androids' heads visible through the glass of the control cab. They were two emotionless blobs. No help there. The car left the daylight, rocked once in a recognition field, slid down a tube filled with cold aluminum light into the yellow glowing of a gigantic, plastrate parking enclosure. Tawny walls and ceiling, a sense of cavernous distance humming with activity. It made the Tegas think of a hive society he'd once experienced. Not one of his better memories. He shuddered. The air car found its parking niche. Stopped. Presently the doors hissed open. The androids flanked the opening. One gestured for him to emerge. The Tegas swallowed in a dry Carmichael throat, climbed out, stared around at the impersonal comings and goings of androids. Neither by eye or emotional aura could he detect a human in the region around him. Intense loneliness came over him. Still without speaking, the androids took his arms, propelled him across an open space into the half-cup of a ring lift. The field grabbed them, shot them upward past blurred walls and flickers of openings. The lift angled abruptly, holding them softly with their faces tipped downward at something near 45 degrees. The androids remained locked beside him like two fish swimming in the air. The lift grip returned to vertical, shot them upward into the center of an amphitheater room. The lift hole became floor beneath his feet. The Tegas stared up and around at a reaching space, immense blue skylight. People, 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 tiers of them peering down at him, tiers of them all around. He probed for emotions, met the terrifying aura of the place, an icy neural stare, a psychic chutzpah. The watchers, rulers all, their minds disconnected from any religion except the self, no nervous coughs, no impatient stirrings. They were an iceberg of silent waiting. He had never imagined such a place even in a nightmare, but he knew this place, recognized it immediately. If a Tegas must end, he thought, then it must be in some such place as this. All the lost experiences that might come to an end here began wailing through him. Someone emerged from an opening on his left, strode toward him across the floor of the amphitheater. Vicentelli. The Tegas stared at the approaching man, noted the eyes favored by deep shadows. Bent black eyes cut into a face where lay a verseless record. Hard glyphs of cheeks, stone-cut mouth. Everything was labor in that face. Work, work, work. It held no notion of fun. It was a contrivance for asserting violence, both spectator and participant. It rode the flesh, cherishing no soft thing at all. A vat of liquid as blue as glowing steel arose from the floor beside the Tegas. Android hands gripped him tightly as he jerked with surprise. Vicentelli stopped in front of him, glanced once at the surrounding banks of faces, back to his victim.
"Perhaps you're ready to save us the trouble of an interrogation in depth," he said.
The Tegas felt his body tremble, shook his head. Vicentelli nodded. With impersonal swiftness, the android stripped the clothing from the Tegas host, lifted him into the vat. The liquid felt warm and tingling. A harness was adjusted to hold his arms and keep his face just above the surface. An inverted dome came down to rest just above his head. The day became a blue stick of light, and he wondered inanely what time it was. It had been early when he'd entered the euthanasia center. Now it was very late, yet he knew the day had hardly advanced past mid-morning. Again he probed the emotional aura, recoiled from it.
"What if they kill me coldly?" he wondered.
Where he could single out individuals, he was reminded of the play of lightning on a far horizon. The emotional beacons were thin, yet filled with potency. A room full of rulers. The Tegas could imagine no more hideous place. Something moved across his stick of light. Vicentelli.
"Who are you?"
Vicentelli asked. "I'm Joe Carmichael," he thought. "I must be only Joe Carmichael." But Carmichael's emotions threatened to overwhelm him. Outrage and submissive terror flickered through the neural exchanges. The host body twitched. Its legs made faint running motions. Vicentelli turned away, spoke to the surrounding watchers.
"The problem with Joseph Carmichael is this violent incident which you're now seeing on your recorders. Let me impress upon you that this incident was not predicted. It was outside our scope. We must assume, therefore, that it was not a product of Joseph Carmichael. During this examination, each of you will study the exposed profile. I want each of you to record your reactions and suggestions. Somewhere here there will be a clue to the unknowns we observed in William Bailey, and before that, in Almiro Singh. Be alert. Observant.
God of eternity, the Tegas thought. They've traced me from Singh to Bailey.
This change in human society went back farther than he'd suspected. How far back? You will note, please, Vicentelli said, that Bailey was in the immediate vicinity when Singh fell from the Peace Tower at Canton and died. Pay particular attention to the material which points to a previous association between Singh and Bailey. There is a possibility that Bailey was at that particular place on Singh's invitation. This could be important.
The Tagus tried to withdraw his being, to insist his emotions. The ruling humans had gone down a developmental side path he'd never expected. They had left him somewhere. He knew why.
Tagus-like, he had immersed himself in the concealing presence of the mob, retreated into daily drudgery, lived like the living. Yet he had never loved the flesh more than in this moment when he knew he could lose it forever. He loved the flesh the way a man might love a house. The intricate structure was a house that breathed and felt.
Abruptly, he underwent a sense of union with the flesh, more intimate than anything of his previous experience. He knew for certain in this instant how a man would feel here. Time had never been an enemy of the Tegas, but time was man's enemy. He was a man now, and he prepared his flesh for maximum reactions, for high energy discharge. Control. That was what this society was up to. Super control.
Vicentelli's face returned to the stick of light. For the sake of convenience, he said, I'll continue to call you Carmichael.
The statement told him baldly that he was in a corner, and Vicentelli knew it. If the Tegas had any doubts,
Vicentelli now removed them. Don't try to kill yourself, Vicentelli said. The mechanism in which you now find yourself can sustain your life even when you least wish that life to continue.
Abruptly, the Tegas realized his Carmichael self should be panic-stricken. There could be no Tegas watchfulness or remoteness here. He was panic-stricken. The host body threshed in the liquid, surged against the bonds. The liquid was heavy, oily, but not oily. It held him as an elastic suit might, dampening his movements, always returning him to the quiescent, fish-like floating.
Now, Vicentelli said.
There was a loud click. Light dazzled the Carmichael eyes. Color rhythms appeared within the light. The rhythms held an epileptic beat. They jangled his mind, shook the Tegas awareness like something loosed in a violent cage. Out of the voice which his universe had become, there appeared questions. He knew they were spoken questions, but he saw them. Word shapes tumbling in a torrent.
Who are you? What are you? We see you for what you are. Why don't you admit what you are? We know you.
The aura of the surrounding watchers drummed at him with accusing vibrations. We know you! Know you! Know you! Know you! The Tagus felt the words rocking him, subduing him. No Tagus can be hypnotized, he told himself, but he could feel his being coming out in shreds. Something was separating Carmichael. The Tagus was losing his grip on the host, but the flesh was being reduced to a mesmerized idiot. The sense of separation intensified. Abruptly, there was an inner sensation of stirring, awakening. He felt the host ego awakening, was powerless to counter it. Thoughts crept along the dancing, shimmering neural paths. Who? What are? Where do? The Tegas punched frantically at the questings. I'm Joe Carmichael. I'm Joe Carmichael. I'm Joe Carmichael. He found vocal control, mouthed the words in dumb rhythm, making this the one answer to all questions. Slowly the host fell silent, smothered in a Tegas envelope. The blundering, bludgeoning interrogation continued. Shake, rattle, question. He felt himself losing all sense of distinction between Tegas and Carmichael. The Bacchet half, whipped and terrorized by the unexpected sophistication of this attack, strewed itself in tangles through the identity net. Voices of old hosts came alive in his mind. You can't, mustn't. I'm Joe Carmichael. Stop them! Why can't we?
You're murdering me!
He screamed. The ranked watchers in the amphitheater united in an aura of pouncing glee.
They're monsters,
Carmichael thought. It was a pure Carmichael thought, unmodified by Tegas awareness, an unfettered human expression surging upwards from within.
You hear me, Tegas? Carmichael demanded. They're monsters.
The Tegas crouched in the flesh, not knowing how to counter this. Never before had he experienced direct communication from a host after that final entrapment. He tried to locate the source of communication. Failed.
Look at him staring down at us like a pack of ghouls, Carmichael thought.
The Tagus knew he should react. But before he could bring himself to it, the interrogation assumed a new intensity.
Shake, rattle, question. Where do you come from? Where do you come from? Where do you come from?
The question tore at him with letters tall as giant buildings, faceless eyes, thundering voices, shimmering words. Carmichael anger surged across the Tegas. Still, the watchers radiated their chill amusement.
Let's die and take one of them, Carmichael insisted.
Who speaks? The Bacchet demanded. How did you get away? Where are you?
God, how cold they are.
That had been a Bailey thought.
Where do you come from? The Bacchet demanded, seeking the host awareness. You are here, but we cannot find you.
I come from Zimbabwe,
Carmichael projected.
You cannot come from Zimbabwe, the Tegas countered. I come from Zimbabwe.
But Zimbabwe is nowhere, the Bacchet insisted.
And all the while, shake, rattle, question, Vicentelli's interrogation continued to jam circuits. The Tegas felt he was being bombarded from all sides and from within. How could Carmichael talk of Zimbabwe?
Then whence comest thou?
Carmichael asked. How could Carmichael know of this matter? The Tegas asked himself. Whence had all Tegas come? The answer was a rote memory at the bottom of all his experiences. At the instant time began, the Tegas intruded upon the blackness where no star, not even a primal dust fleck, had tracked the dimensions with its being. They had been where senses had not been. How could Carmichael's ego still exist and know to ask of such things?
And why shouldn't I ask? Carmichael insisted. It's what Vicentelli asks.
But where had the trapped ego of the host flesh hidden?
Whence took it an existence to speak now?
The Bacchet half had experienced enough.
Say him down, the Bacchet commanded. Say him down. We are Joe Carmichael. You are Joe Carmichael. I am Joe Carmichael. Don't panic, Carmichael soothed. You are Tagus Bakket, one being. I am Joe Carmichael. And from the outer world, Vicentelli roared, Who are you? I command you to tell me who you are. You must obey me. Are you William Bailey?
Silence, inward and outward. In the silence, the Tagus probed the abused flesh, understood part of the nature behind Vicentelli's attack. The liquid in which the host lay immersed. It was an anesthetic. The flesh was being robbed of sensation until only inner nerve tangles remained. Even more, the anesthetized flesh had been invaded by a control device. A throbbing capsule lay against the Carmichael's spine, signaling, commanding, interfering.
The capsule has been attached, Vicentelli said. I will take him now to the lower chamber where the interrogation can proceed along normal channels. He's completely under our control now.
In the trapped flesh, the Bakket half searched out neural connections of the control capsule, tried to block them, succeeded only partly. Anesthetized flesh resisted Bakket probes. The Tagus, poised like a frightened spider in the host awareness, studied the softly throbbing neural currents for a solution. Should he attack? Resume complete control? What could he attack? Vicentelli's interrogation had tangled identities in the host in a way that might never be unraveled. The control capsule pulsed. Carmichael's flesh obeyed a new command. Restraining bands slid aside. The Tagus stood up in the tank on unfeeling feet. Where his chest was exposed, sensation began to return. The inverted hemisphere was lifted from his head.
You see,
Vicentelli said, addressing the watchers above them.
He obeys perfectly.
Inwardly, Carmichael asked, Tagus, can you reach out and see how they feel about all this? There might be a clue in their emotions.
Do it,
the Bakket commanded. The Tagus probed surrounding space, felt boredom, undertones of suspicion, a cat-licking sense of power. Yes, the mouse lay trapped between claws. The mouse could not escape. Android hands helped the Tagus out of the tank, stood him on the floor, steadied him.
Perfect control, Vicentelli said.
As the control capsule commanded, the Carmichael eyes stared straight ahead with a blank emptiness. The Tagus sent a questing probe along the nearest channels, met Bakket, Carmichael, uncounted bits of others.
How can you be here, Joe Carmichael? He asked.
The host flesh responded to a capsule command, walked straight ahead across the floor of the amphitheater.
Why aren't you fleeing or fighting me? The Tagus insisted.
No need,
Carmichael responded. We're all mixed up together, as you can see.
Why aren't you afraid?
I was. Am. Hope not to be.
How do you know about the Tagus?
How not? We're each other.
The Tagus experienced a shock blink of awareness at this, felt an uneasy back at projection. Nothing in all Tagus experience recalled such an inner encounter. The host fought and lost, or the Tagus ended there. And the lost host went, Where? A fearful questing came from the Bakket, a sense of broken continuity.
That damnable interrogation.
The host flesh, responding to the capsule's commands, had walked through a doorway into a blue hallway. As sensation returned, Tagus Carmichael Bakket grew aware of Vicentelli's following and other footsteps. Android Law Nicks.
What do you want, Joe Carmichael? The Tagus demanded.
I want to share.
Why?
You're more than I was. You can give me longer life. You're curious. Interesting. Half the creeps we got at the East Center were worn down by boredom, and I was almost at that stage myself. Now, living is interesting once more.
How can we live together? In here?
We're doing it.
But I'm Tagus. I must rule in here.
So, rule.
and that Tagus realized he had been restored to almost complete contact with the host's neural system. Still, the intrusive Carmichael ego remained, and the Bacchet was doing nothing about this situation, appeared to have withdrawn to wherever the Bacchet went. Carmichael remained, a slithering, mercuric thing, right there. No, over here. No, no, not there, not here. Still, he remained. The host must submit without reservation, the Tagus commanded.
I submit,
Carmichael agreed.
Then where are you?
We're all in here together. You're in command of the flesh, aren't you? The Tagus had to admit he was in command.
What do you want, Joe Carmichael? He insisted.
I've told you.
You haven't.
I want to watch, to share.
Why should I let you do that?
Vicentelli and his control capsule had brought the host flesh now to a drop chute. The chute's field gripped the Carmichael flesh, sent it whispering downward, downward, downward.
Maybe you have no choice in whether I stay and watch, Joe Carmichael responded.
I took you once, the Tagus countered. I can take you again.
What happens when they resume the interrogation? Carmichael asked.
What do you mean?
He means, the Bacchet intruded, that the true George Carmichael can respond with absolute verisimilitude to their search for a profile comparison.
The drop chute disgorged him into a long, icy white laboratory space. Through the fixated eyes came a sensation of metal shapes, of instruments, of glitterings and flashings, of movement. The Tagus stood in capsule-induced paralysis. It was a condition any Tagus could override, but he dared not. No human could surmount this neural assault. The merest movement of a finger now amounted to exposure. In the shared arena of their awareness, Carmichael said,
Okay, let me have the con for a while. Watch. Don't intrude at all.
The Tagus hesitated.
Do it,
the Bacchet commanded. The Tagus withdrew. He found himself in emptiness, a nowhere of the mind, an unseen place, constrained vacuity, nothing, never, an unspoken, unspeaking pill of absence, uncontained. This was a place where senses had not been, could not be. He feared it, but felt protected by it. Hidden. A sense of friendship and reassurance came to him from Carmichael. The Tagus felt a hopeless sense of gratitude for the first other creature friendship he'd ever experienced. But why should Carmichael ego be friendly? Doubt worried at him, nipped and nibbled. Why? No answer came. Unless an unmeasured simplicity radiating from the Bacchet could be interpreted as answer. The Tagus found he had an economy of reservations about his position. This astonished him. He recognized he was making something new with all the dangers inherent in newness. It wasn't logical, but he knew thought might be the least careless when it was the least logical. Time is the enemy of the flesh, he reminded himself. Time is not my enemy. Reflections of meaning, actions, and intentions began coming to him from the outer being place where Carmichael sat. Vicentelli had resumed to the attack with induced colors, shapes, flarings, and dazzles. Words leaped across a Tagus mind sky. Who are you?
Answer, I know you're there. Answer, who are you?
Joe Carmichael mumbled half-stupefied protests.
Why are you torturing me? What are you doing?
Shake, rattle, question.
Stop hiding from me.
Carmichael's response wiggled outwards.
What are you doing?
Silence enveloped the flesh. The Tagus began receiving muted filterings of a debate.
I tell you, his profile matches the Carmichael identity with exactness. Saw him change. Perhaps chemical poisoning. Euthanasia center. Consistent with ingestion of picrotoxin. Coincidence. Creeping out into the necessary neural channels, the Tegas probed his surroundings for the emotional aura. Found only Vicentelli and two androids. The androids were frigid, emotionless shells. Vicentelli was a blazing core of frustrated anger. Voices rained from a communication screen in the lab ceiling.
Have an end to it! Eliminate him and have done with it! This is a waste of time!
You're mistaken, Vic.
Stop wasting our time!
They were commanding death for the Carmichael flesh, the Tegas realized. He thought of an arena, its rim dripping with thumbs. Death. Those had been the days. Short-lived hosts and easy transfers. But now, would he dare tackle Vicentelli? It was almost certain failure, and the Tegas knew it. The hard shell of a ruler's ego could resist any assault. A sharp snap echoed in the lab. The communication screen went blank. What now? The Tegas wondered.
If Bailey's death didn't eliminate it, Vicentelli muttered, why should the death of Carmichael be any different? What can stop it? The thing survived Singh, and Lord knows how many before that.
The Tegas felt his back at half flexing unseen membranes.
If I'm right, Vicentelli muttered, the thing lives on forever in host bodies. It lives, enjoys. What if life were not enjoyable?
The death of this human has been commanded, one of the androids said. Do you wish us to leave?
Leave? Yes,
Vicentelli said. The frigid android radiations receded. We're gone. The other rulers who'd been watching through the screen were convinced Vicentelli was wrong, the Tegas realized. But they'd commanded death for Carmichael. The androids had been sent away, of course. They could have no part in a human death. The Tegas felt Carmichael cringing, demanding,
what'll we do?
The Bacchet tested a muscle in the host's left arm, a muscle the Tegas host had never before consciously sensed. Flesh rippled, relaxed. Exposure means final dissolution, the Tegas warned. It was his most basic inhibition. We must remain cryptic in color and behavior, impossible to separate from any background.
We're already exposed.
It was a pure Joe Carmichael thought.
What'll we do?
A sensation of flowing wetness radiated from the control capsule on the host's spine.
All right, Vicentelli said. They don't believe me, but we're alone now.
He stared into Carmichael's eyes, and I can try whatever I want.
What if your life isn't enjoyable, eh?
The sensation of wetness reached the brain. Immediate blackness. The Tegas recoiled upward, fighting past the neural shock. Regaining some awareness. Carmichael's neurosystem quivered and rolled, filtered out some sounds, let others through with a booming roar. The Tegas felt outraged by scraping tactility, harsh movements, rollings. Vicentelli was doing something at a glittering console directly in front of him. The rolling sensation went on and on and on, swaying, dipping, gliding, and pain. Tegas, measuring out his attention, felt the shuttlecock entanglements of his being with that of Carmichael. Blank spots were Carmichael, fuzzy grayness, and tightly stretched threads that linked bulbs of ego reserve. There, there, and there, pieces of Carmichael, all quiescent. The Bacchet nudged his awareness, an inner touch like the prickling of cactus spines. Whisper thoughts came.
Gotta get out of here. Trapped. Gotta get out of here. Trapped. Trapped.
He was forming verbal concepts in thousands of languages simultaneously.
What was Vicentelli doing?
The Tegas felt a pulse from the control capsule. A leg twitched. He snapped a reflex block onto that neural region to resume control. One eye opened, rolled. The Tegas fought for control of the visual centers, saw a multifaceted creation of wires and crystals directly above him, blurs of green movement, all focused on the control capsule. The host's flesh felt as though it had been encased in a tight skin. Vicentelli swam into his range of vision.
"Now let us see how long you can hide," Vicentelli said. "We call this the torture skin."
He moved something on the control console. Tegas felt alertness return. He moved a left foot. Pain slashed at knee and ankle. He gasped. Pain raked his back and chest.
"Very good," Vicentelli said. "It's the movements you make. Do you understand? Remain unmoving. No pain. Move. Pain."
Tegas permitted his host to take a deep, quivering breath. Knives played with his chest and spine.
"To breathe, to flex our wrist, to walk, all equal pain," Vicentelli said. "The beauty of it is there's no bodily harm, but you'll pay for something simple as injury unless you give up."
"You're an animal,"
the Tegas managed. Agony licked along his jaw and lips, flayed his temples.
"Give up," Vicentelli said.
"Animal,"
the Tegas whispered. He felt his back at half, throwing pain blocks into the neural system, tried a shallow breath. Faint irritation rewarded the movement, but he simulated a pain reaction. Closed his eyes. Fire crept along his brows. A swift block eased the pain.
"Why prolong it?" Vicentelli asked. "What are you?"
"You're insane," Tegas whispered.
He waited, feeling the pain blocks click into place.
Darting lights glittered in Vicentelli's eyes. "Do you really feel the pain?"
he asked. He moved a handle on the console. The host was hurled to the floor by a flashing command from the control capsule. Under Bacchet guidance, he writhed with the proper pain reactions, allowed them to subside slowly.
"You feel it," Vicentelli said. "Good."
He reached down, jerked his victim upright, steadied him. The Bacchet had almost all the pain under control, signaling proper concealment reactions. The host flesh grimaced, resisted movement, stood awkwardly.
"I have all the time I need," Vicentelli said. "You cannot outlast me. Surrender. Perhaps I may even find a use for you. I know you're there, whatever you are. You must realize this by now. You can speak candidly with me. Confess. Explain yourself. What are you? What use can I make of you?"
Moving his lips stiffly as though against great pain, Tega said,
"If I were what you suggest, what would I fear from such as you?"
"Very good," Vicentelli crowed. "We progress. What should you fear from me? And what should I fear from you?"
"Madman,"
Tegas whispered.
"Ah, now," Vicentelli said, "hear if this is mad. My profile on you says I should fear you only if you die. Therefore I will not kill you. You may wish to die, but I will not permit you to die. I can keep the body alive indefinitely. It will not be an enjoyable life, but it will be life. I can make you breathe. I can make your heart work. Do you wish a full demonstration?"
The inner whispers resumed, and the Tegas fought against them.
"We can't escape. Trapped."
The Bacchet radiated hesitant uncertainty. A Bailey thought,
"It's a nightmare, that's what."
Tegas stood in wonder. A Bailey thought. Bacchet admonitions intruded.
"Be still. We must work together. Serenity, serenity, serenity."
The Tegas felt himself drifting off on waves of tranquility, was shocked by a Bacchet thought scream.
"Not you!"
Vicentelli moved one of his console controls. Tagus let out a muffled scream as both his arms jerked upward. Another Vicentelli adjustment, and Tagus bent double, whipped upright. Backett prompted, whimpering sounds escaped his lips.
"What are you?"
Vicentelli asked in his softest voice. Tagus sensed the frantic inner probings as the Backett searched out the neural linkages, blocked them. Perspiration bathed the host flesh.
"Very well," Vicentelli said. "Let us go for a long hike."
The host's legs began pumping up and down in a stationary march. Tagus stared straight ahead, pop-eyed with simulation of agony.
"This will end when you answer my questions," Vicentelli said. "What are you? Hup, two, three, four. Who are you? Hup, two, three, four."
The host flesh jerked with obedience to the commands. Tagus again felt the thousands of old languages taking place within him, a babble. With an odd detachment, he realized he must be a museum of beings and remembered energies.
"Ask yourself how long you can stand this," Vicentelli said.
"I'm Joe Carmichael," he gasped.
Vicentelli stepped close, studied the evidences of agony.
"Up, two, three, four."
Still, the babble persisted. He was a flow of energy, Tagus realized. Energy, energy, energy. Energy was the only solid in the universe. He was wisdom seated in a bed of languages. But wisdom chastised the wise and spit upon those who came to pay homage. Wisdom was for copyists and clerks. Power, then, he thought. But power, when exercised, fragmented. How simple to attack Vicentelli now, Tagus thought. We're alone, no one is watching. I could strike him down in an instant. The habits of all that eon's long history inhibited action. Inevitably, he had picked up some of the desires, hopes, and fears, especially the fears of his uncounted hosts. Their symbols sucked at him now. A pure Bailey thought.
We can't keep this up forever.
The Tagus felt Bailey's sharings, the Carmichaels, the mysterious coupling of selves, the never-before engagement with the captive.
One clean punch, Carmichael insisted. Up, two, three, four, Vicentelli said, peering closely at his victim.
Abruptly, the Tagus felt himself looking inward from the far end of his being. He saw all of his habits of thought contained in the shapes of every action he'd ever contemplated. The thoughts took form to control flesh, a blaze of energy, a solid. In that flaring instant he became pure performance. All the violent killers the Tagus had overwhelmed rose up in him, struck outward, and he was the experience. Overpoweringly single with it, not limited by any description, without symbols. Vicentelli lay unconscious on the floor. Tagus stared at his own right hand. The thing had taken on a life of its own. Its movement had been unique to the moment, a flashing jab with fingers extended, a crushing impact against a nerve bundle in Vicentelli's neck. "Have I killed him?" he wondered. Vicentelli stirred, groaned. So, there had been Tagus' inhibitions on the blow, an exquisite control that could overpower but not kill, the Tagus thought. Tagus moved to Vicentelli's head, stooped to examine him. Moving, he felt the torture skin relax, glanced up at the green glowing construction, realized the thing's field was limited. Again, Vicentelli groaned. Tagus pressed the nerve bundle in the man's neck. Vicentelli subsided, went limp. Pure Tagus thoughts rose up in the Carmichael neural system. He realized he'd been living for more than a century, immersed in a culture which had regressed. They had invented a new thing, almost absolute control.
but it held an old pattern. The Egyptians had tried it, and many before them, and a few since. The Tigers thought of the phenomenon as the man-machine. Pain controlled it, and food, pleasure, ritual. The control capsule irritated his senses. He felt the aborted action message, a faint echo, back at repressed.
Up, two, three, four.
With the action message went the emotional inhibitions deadly to Tegas' survival. The Tegas felt sensually subdued. He thought of a world where no concentrated emotions remained, no beacons upon which he could home his short-burst transfer of identity. The Carmichael flesh shuddered to a Tegas response. The Bacchet stirred, transmitting sensations of urgency. Yes, there was urgency. Androids might return. Vicentelli's fellow rulers might take it upon themselves to check the activity of this room. He reached around to his back, felt the control capsule, a flat, tapered package, cold, faintly pulsing. He tried to insert a finger beneath it, felt the flesh rebel.
Ah! The linkage was mortal.
The diabolic thing joined the spine. He explored the connections internally, realized the thing could be removed given time and the proper facilities. But he had not the time. Vicentelli's lips made feeble writhings, a baby's mouth searching for the nipple. Tegas concentrated on Vicentelli, a ruler. Tegas rightly avoided such as this. Vicentelli's kind knew how to resist the mind swarm. They had ego power. Perhaps the Vicentellis had provided the key to their own destruction, though. Whatever happened, the Tegas knew he could never return into the human mass. The new man-machine provided no hiding place. In this day of new things, another new thing had to be tried. Tegas reached for the control capsule on his back, inserted three fingers beneath it. With the Bacchet blocking off the pain, he wrenched the capsule free. All sensation left his lower limbs. He collapsed across Vicentelli, brought the capsule around to study it. The removal had dealt a mortal blow to the Carmichael host, but there were no protests in their shared awareness, only a deep curiosity about the capsule. Simple, deadly thing. Operation obvious. Barbed needles protruded along its inner surface. He cleaned shreds of flesh from them, working fast. The host was dying rapidly, blood pumping onto the floor and spinal fluid. He levered himself onto one elbow, rolled Vicentelli onto one side, pulled away the man's jacket and shirt. A bit of fleshly geography, a ridge of spine, lay exposed. Tegas knew this landscape from the inward examination of the capsule. He gauged the position required, slapped the capsule home. Vicentelli screamed. He jerked away, scrabbled across the floor, leaped upright.
Up, two, three, four.
His legs jerked up and down in terrible rhythm. Sounds of agony escaped his lips. His eyes rolled. The Carmichael body slumped to the floor, and Tegas waited for the host to die. Too bad about this host, a promising one, but he was committed now. No turning back. Death came as always. A wink out, and after the flicker of blankness, he centered on the emotional scream which was Vicentelli. The Tegas divided from dead flesh bore away with that always new sensation of supreme discovery, a particular thing relevant to nothing else in the universe except himself. He was pain. But it was pain he had known, analyzed, understood, and could isolate. The pain contained all there was of Vicentelli's identity. Encapsulated that way, it could be absorbed piecemeal, shredded off at will. And the new host's flesh was grateful.
With the Tagus came surcease from pain. Slowly, the marching subsided. The Tagus blocked off control circuits, adjusted Vicentelli's tunic to conceal the capsule on his back, paused to contemplate how easy this capture had been. It required a dangerous change of pattern, yes. A Tagus must dominate, risk notice, not blend with his surroundings. With an abrupt sense of panic, William Bailey came alive in his awareness.
We made it!
In that instant, the Tagus was hanging by the hook of his being, momentarily lost in the host he'd just captured. The intermittency of mingled egos terrified and enthralled. As he had inhabited others, now he was inhabited. Even the new host, silent, captivated, became part of a changed universe, one that threatened in a different way. All maw. He realized he'd lost contact with the intellectual centers. His path touched only nerve ends. He had no home for his breath, couldn't find the flesh to wear it. Backet signals darted around him, a frantic, searching clamor. The flesh, the flesh, the flesh! He'd worn the flesh too gently, he realized. He'd been lulled by its natural laws and his own. He'd put aside all reaching questions about the organism, had peered out of the flesh unconcerned, leaving all worries to the Backet. One axiom had soothed him. The Backet knows. But the Backet was loosed around him, and he no longer held the flesh. The flesh held him, a grip so close it threatened to choke him.
The flesh cannot choke me, he thought. It cannot. I love the flesh.
Love. There was a toehold, a germ of contact. The flesh remembered how he had eased its agony. Memories of other flesh intruded. Tendrils of association accumulated. He thought of all the flesh he'd loved on this world. The creatures with their big eyes, their ears flat against their heads, smooth caps of hair, beautiful mouths and cheeks. The Tagus always noticed mouths. The mouth betrayed an infinite variety of things about the flesh around it. A Vicentelli's self-image came into his awareness, swimming like a ghost in a mirror. The Tagus thought about the verseless record, the stone-cut mouth, no notion of fun. That was the thing about Vicentelli's mouth. He'll have to learn fun now, the Tagus thought. He felt the feet then, hard against the floor, and the Backet was with him. But the Backet had a voice that touched the auditory centers from within. It was the voice of William Bailey and countless others. "Remove the signs of struggle before the androids return," the voice said. He obeyed, looked down at the empty flesh which had been Joe Carmichael. But Joe Carmichael was with him in this flesh, Vicentelli's flesh, which still twitched faintly to the broadcast commands transmitted through the capsule on his spine. "Have to remove the capsule as soon as possible," the Backet voice reminded. You know the way to do it. The Tagus marveled at the Vicentelli overtone suddenly noticeable in the voice. Abruptly, he glimpsed the dark side of his being through Vicentelli, and he saw an aspect of the Backet he'd never suspected. He realized he was a net of beings who enjoyed their captivity, were strong in their captivity, would not exchange it for any other existence. They were Tagus in a real sense, moving him by habits of thought, shaping actions out of uncounted mediations. The Backet half had accumulated more than 40 centuries of mediations on this one world, and there were uncounted worlds before this one. Language and thought. Language was the instrument of the sentient being, yet the being was the instrument of language, as Tagus was the instrument of the Backet. He searched for significant content in this new awareness, was chided by the Backet's sneer. To search for content was to search for limits where there were no limits. Content was logic and classification. It was a word sieve through which to judge experience. It was nothing in itself, could never satisfy.
Experience, that was the thing. Action, the infinite reenactment of life accompanied by its endless procession of images. There are things to be done, the Tegas thought. The control capsule pulsed on his spine. The capsule, yes, and many more things.
They have bugged the soul, he thought. They've mechanized the soul and are forever damned. Well, I must join them for a while.
He passed a hand through a call beam. Summon the androids to clear away the discarded host that had been Carmichael. A door opened at the far end of the lab. Three androids entered, marching in line towards him. They were suddenly an amusing six-armed figure, their arms moving that way in obedient cadence. The Vicentelli mouth formed an unfamiliar smile. Briefly, he set the androids to the task of cleaning up the mess in the lab. Then the Tegas began the quiet exploration of his new host, a task he found remarkably easy with his new understanding. The host cooperated. He explored Vicentelli slowly, strong, lovely, healthy flesh. Explored as one might explore a strange land, swimming across coasts of awareness that loomed and receded. A host had behavior that must be learned. It was not well to dramatize the Tegas difference. There would be changes, of course, but slow ones. Nothing dramatic in its immediacy. While he explored, he thought of the mischief he could do in this new role. There were so many ways to disrupt the man-machine, to revive individualism, to have fun. Lovely mischief. Intermittently, he wondered what had become of the Bailey ego and the Joe Carmichael ego. Only the Bacchet remained in the host with him. And the Bacchet transmitted a sensation of laughter.